Welcome to MGO Podcast 13.0A, concerning Michigan's offense in the year 2021. Enjoy. I forgot what I do with these. I'm talking now, but I don't... Was there a thing that I used to do at the beginning of these?
I mean, I don't remember. I've been through so much the last few months that...
It's very strange. We're in a room together.
Yeah, talking... Well, this is new, too. Like, there's other human beings in the same room as me who are not related to me.
Yeah. I'm flabbergasted.
I'm happy. I'm happy to be back here. I'm happy to be excited about a football season.
Just happy we got a new sponsor.
I go do sponsor. Sponsor's going to take a while now because we got a lot of people who we got to thank here. Underground Printing, for one, they've been making this all possible. Rich and Ryan are still behind us, still our biggest supporters. And you can check out their wide selection of officially licensed Michigan fan gear at their three store locations in Ann Arbor. You can also get your Hail the Victors there or check out their custom apparel business at undergroundshirts.com. I also want to mention our associate sponsors, Homesure Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law,
Peak Wealth Management,
Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentleman Coders, and I also want to shout out SignalWire, which is the virtual office platform we recorded on throughout the pandemic, because Zoom sucks, and if you want to give them a try because you're sick of it as well, go to SignalWire.com and use the code Muppets, and they'll buy your team lunch. We are not at SignalWire today because we are here at Forum. They want to call it Forum, and I want them to call it 4M.
Well,
because like we're 4M, we're 4 Michigan.
The sponsor gets to say what their name is.
That is not true.
That is true.
That is absolutely not true. What about Huel? Were they called Huel before we started that?
Well,
there you go.
Mostly, they get to decide what they're called.
All right, so Forum were started by a couple from the MGO blog community, one of them a former athlete who met in California. They moved back here to start a new kind of rental property. We are in their largest property here on 830 Henry Street right now, which is 11 units, 66 bedrooms, and some unique amenities like offices, workspaces, and a podcast studio.
Yes, and I live very near here, so I was happy to see this go up, and I'm happy that they're going to probably redo the Lucky space into something that will be useful instead of empty.
Yes, and make it very maize and bluish and have it kind of be part of the athletic department's, you know, side, the stuff around. So,
sure.
Yeah, they have a very similar attachment to the program that we do, right?
But like, anyway.
Satellite. Anyway, we have a third.
Yes.
We have a new guy.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Brian Cook. This is the MGO Blog Podcast. You've been also listening to Seth, and that is Alex Drain, who is...
Not actually new. He's actually been sitting next to us for a lot of
these. He's been around, but yeah. He's...
Yeah, lurking in the background. But
yes, he's coming out of his chrysalis as a beautiful butterfly of football knowledge. And we are here to talk about the upcoming Michigan basketball season.
Soon.
And hockey?
Soon. We can do that soon. Don't do that, because we need to start talking hockey in here. And,
right.
And doesn't
that sound fun?
No, because I got in trouble for WTK. I was talking history, and like people were like mad that I didn't talk about the upcoming Michigan football season.
What's that? I think it's pronounced football.
It's kicking
the ball around. You can probably tell that my enthusiasm for this hypothetical football season is not high.
Really, Brian? I mean, my thought was that Alex and I, like, through this process, could convince you to, like, get back into Michigan football. Like,
get back into it.
Yeah, over the course of the next three podcasts, you're going to be, like, so hyped.
So you're like...
That you're going to want to run out under that banner and...
So you guys are just, like, swimming around in the rusty nails and you're like, join us, it's lovely. Is that the goal here?
Some of the nails aren't so rusty.
Well, we can talk about that.
Especially in this podcast. This is the offense podcast.
All right. Well, let's start out with quarterback.
Quarterback.
Where Cade McNamara holds on by somewhere between a fingernail and a great distance, depending on who you're listening to on any particular day.
Yeah, and if they're listening to us, we think probably Cade McNamara is at least going to start for most of this year.
Yeah.
Until he gets hurt, probably.
All right, I didn't do that. I'm supposed to, you're supposed to be the positive one.
All right, is that how I'll be positive? No, no, no.
No.
Wait.
Just be who you are.
Well, I am normally positive.
Well, I mean, to some extent.
I am actually pretty positive about Kay, but I think that we just don't know very much about him because we got a total of 9 drives out of him, and seven of them were good. I'm not counting, like, Penn State after he got hurt.
Okay.
So we had, like, 2 drives against Wisconsin. One really good, one not so good. And then we had 7 drives against Rutgers.
Rutgers.
Which is Rutgers. But he looked great. He looked like a quarterback against Rutgers.
I mean, it's not quite to this extent. But you remember when it was Alex Melzone was in the spring game?
Uh-huh.
And he threw everything behind the line of scrimmage?
Yes.
And it's not quite to that extent. But watching Cade on the field last year, it was just like, okay, this guy, he's in the Breeze kind of Brady camp of quarterbacks where, like, he's got to be completely on point mentally. Like, his arm strength isn't great.
Right.
It's okay. You know, his accuracy was decent. His mobility is okay. Like, it just seems like he's got to be one of those guys who's way ahead of the pack mentally if he's going to really be a championship level quarterback.
But that's kind of what he is.
I mean, that's what they say.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's clear about Cade is that he has at least the right mindset to want to be the guy.
Sure.
I mean, a few weeks ago, Ryan Hayes said, like, I've never seen a quarterback take charge of the locker room like this. And you remember, like, the notable thing about Cade last year was that hype post-game speech. Like, the guy wants to compete.
I mean, that's,
I don't know what that really means.
Yeah,
but
I mean, you kind of hear stuff like that every year.
I mean,
year.
It's better than being at the golf course, right? Like, you'd rather be.
That's true. You don't hear that every year. Just most years.
Yeah, I mean, that's who he is. We saw that he was running the offense against Rutgers. And I thought it was notable that he ran the offense and Joe Milton kind of didn't. Like, you know, you talk about some of the things they throw behind the line of scrimmage, but it's also those slants that they run on RPOs, which were real RPOs, where, like, they kind of weren't doing that with Milton. They were just kind of have him chuck it down the sideline or whatnot.
Well, you know, at that point, Milton was playing hurt, already started out with a very limited skill set where he could throw absolute ropes 20 yards downfield. We'll call it the mallet. So he had the mallet skill set where he had no touch on anything and just rifled everything 100 miles an hour. And so there was that sort of early period in the season, which we're going to call the Minnesota game.
Right.
Where people were not yet aware that this was, like, the one thing that he was really good at and couldn't sit on it. So McNamara did have more diversity to his game, but, you know,
I mean, there was the pass to Sainristil that he threw in that Sainristil actually, like, jumped up and got Jerry Gallen style.
Mm. I mean, he had some deep shots. I'm not saying that he's got a total pop gun arm, but he definitely doesn't have that sort of, like, drive that Milton had. And so that's going to be something that it's not a huge problem on the college level. It'll be a problem if and when he gets to the pro level. But you just look at the alternatives here. And even though J.J. McCarthy is a 5-star, he is a true freshman. Alan Bowman is a transfer from Texas Tech. He has a lot of experience, but he didn't get on campus in the spring.
Yeah.
So
and got passed immediately by J.J. McCarthy.
Well, J.J. McCarthy was on campus in the spring. So, yeah. Like, I don't know if that's completely accurate.
Well, I mean, their talk, as far as the talk now, and this is from, you know, the people they let into the practices and stuff, yeah, like that. Like, J.J. McCarthy is definitely the number 2 already.
Well, and Bowman might not be right from his multiple lung collapses, I think, last year. Like, this guy is like the Drake Johnson of this year's team, where it's just like, right, you gotta watch out in case there's any vehicles that might veer into his path. The Wile E. Coyote. So this is a situation where Cade McNamara has won the job mostly by default.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No, all due respect to J.J. McCarthy and his 5-star status.
A true freshman.
True freshman. And true freshmen don't walk into jobs at quarterback very often. And when they do, it's usually not very good.
Yeah. I mean, there was the rare kind of guy that everyone kind of has to get out of the way for. And even then, it's not necessarily that great. But he's, I mean, they said he's not that kind of guy. They said he's the kind of guy that's going to need, you know, maybe a year in the program before real takeoff. People who have been at practices are like, the faster he gets this thing, the faster he's going to take over for Cade. So, I mean, there's a lot of upside with JJ.
Keep the seat warm situation?
Kind of. I think my read on it is that McNamara is kind of a solid floor, and that he does read the defenses well enough, and he does run the offense well enough that you're not going to have a disaster at quarterback.
Well, we have to address the fact that that is no longer like a certainty. Like, Jim Harbaugh came here and he had a spotless record of quarterback development, and now he has a quarterback's coach who is not Jim Harbaugh.
Is he really going to be doing the quarterback's coaching, though? Like,
and we've seen guys not get better. I mean, we saw Shea Patterson. He didn't get better. You know, Dylan McCaffrey transferred to Northern Colorado, and we don't really know if Milton got better or not, but he didn't maintain. He didn't look like he was getting better over the course of the season, and part of that is because he did get hurt, and so it's really hard to judge. Also, it was a 6-game COVID season, so how much did we really glean from that? But lack of retention and an apparent lack of development is something that is a major problem for this program right now, and it's so Cade McNamara is going to go from a redshirt freshman to a redshirt sophomore, and this is pretty much like, I think, put up or shut up for the Harbaugh era. Like, if Cade McNamara turns into a quarterback who can get you to like 8-4, like we're not asking for an Ohio State victory this year. We're asking for like
2018 the Outback Shea Bowl. Patterson. We're looking at like if he can be 2018 Shea Patterson, I think that's what you're expecting from McNamara, and that's kind of like what
that is what you're expecting.
I think you'd be very happy if that's what
that seems wildly optimistic to me.
I would say that's a ceiling.
Alex seems to be in the same boat here.
I mean, the thing with Cade is that it's just we really don't have any idea. I mean, in terms of you can make him what you want him to be in your brain, because we got one small snippet. And it looked pretty promising, and then
I think it looks promising relative to what was happening with Milton at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
Like, people come in, and they're the backup, and they're everybody's favorite for a while, and so you have this sort of rosy glow on how he performed last year that may not actually reflect what's going to happen.
The one question is at what point does the fan base start screaming for J.J. McCarthy?
Second incompletion, probably. First, if it's on a screen.
Because there will be so much desire from the fan base to sort of, like, lose a game. Why are we going to lose with an older guy when we could lose with the younger guy that is the golden boy, right?
Because you can ruin the golden boy by getting him hit. I mean, if we're losing the game because McNamara's making the wrong reads, that's one thing. If we're losing the game because McNamara's getting killed out there, and I don't think that's going to be the issue, but, you know, you never know. Like, it depends. You do not want to get a young quarterback hit a lot. That is, like, the worst thing you could do, especially with, like, a, you know, frail guy, like, or not frail, but skinnier guy like McCarthy.
All right, cards on the table. Cade McNamara, yards per attempt this year.
7.6.
Yeah, I was going to say 7.
6.7.
Okay.
All right.
There we go.
Yeah.
Boiler up. I don't know what that means in this context.
Row the boat.
Row the boat.
There you go. Do you want to move on to running backs?
Yes.
Okay. No, wait. There has been rumors that Dan Villari is going to play in a Taysom Hill Wildcat. Harbaugh mentioned that like a month ago, and it popped up in rumors this week again.
Okay. So we've said that out loud, and now I think we can move on.
Just want to put it out there.
Ole was going to win anyway. Ole was going to win.
So, like...
Ole would have won. That's what we'll call him.
Yeah, Ole would have won. That's good prospecting there. It is done. It is complete. You remember when they put Jabril Peppers in the Wildcat and... just had him run like the one play that they had for that.
Until IO was like, "Oh, we know how to beat that, and you don't know how to."
Right. So I don't want that to happen. That's my stance. I don't want to see Dan Villari out there unless he's.
What if he's
raining hell on Ohio State?
What if he's Tim Tebow? What if that's exactly what Tim Tebow would be in a modern offense?
Well,
Tim Tebow's a tight end now.
That'll be different.
No, he's not.
He's a
tight end on the roster.
He's back to being a youth pastor. Anyway, let's talk about running back. This is actually one of the brighter spots on the team. It's not often you can say that Zach Charbonnet transferred because he just got beat out, but that's what happened.
Like, yeah, and he looked good for UCLA against Hawaii, but
yeah.
But yeah, that he's gone because these guys were probably going to take all the
couldn't
carries.
Couldn't get carries. Like, he couldn't get carries away from Hassan Haskins. And it's one of those things where you're watching the game, and when Hassan Haskins isn't in there, you're like, Hassan Haskins should be in there. It's just one of those things you just feel. And everybody watching the game could feel it because that guy breaks tackles. He falls forward. He's a grinder. And maybe he doesn't have the upside of Charbonnet, but Charbonnet wasn't making the kind of yards that Haskins was with the blocking that Michigan had last year.
Yeah, PFF had an interesting take on Haskins. They said that he sees where he wants to go way quicker than the other running backs.
With one notable exception.
Yeah.
Sorry. I mean, let's just pretend I didn't say that. Everybody.
Yeah. So, yeah, he has his Josh Metellus moment. And
all right. Let's move on very quickly.
But other than that, he knows where he wants to go, so he sets up his blocks really well, and vision is not just about knowing which hole to go to. It's when you know which hole to go to and what you can do with that information in the, you know, half a second that you get by figuring that out and seeing what the defense is doing and whatnot. And that's part of how Haskins has been so successful. I know everyone's going to call him like the most underrated dude ever, but like it's still true. Like people are still not as high on Haskins. And as I was going through the season and I was doing all the stuff to prepare for this podcast and writing Hail the Victors and whatnot, keeping myself positive about Michigan was kind of a mental exercise. And I bring it up now because Haskins highlights were like the thing that could tether me back to my Michigan fandom. Like I was doing Michigan State UFR.
That doesn't make me feel that great. Because like I like Hassan Haskins, but you know he's not going to be an All American. He's probably not going to be an All Big Ten level back. He's just a good solid.
He did
Big
put
Ten
up
player.
6.1 yards per carry behind that O line last year.
Yes.
Well.
And he did not do it by like breaking off 70 yarders unless he broke off a 66 yarder when he broke four tackles and carried a couple guys for the last 15. But like he deserves that. You can put that into his stats.
Okay.
Yes. And like he jumps over dudes, he, you know, knocks them over, he drags people. Like it's the kind of thing that if you're watching a game and you need something to like, pick you up again, he's got those moments.
You guys are like high on him. Like you think that he's like an All Big Ten level guy.
I think he could be. I mean,
that's a cop out.
Okay. So when I was doing the enemy running back piece, I think undersold Haskins, and then I went back and just looked at his stats relative to the other guys on the schedule, and I was like, yeah, actually Haskins is really good, like compared to these other options.
Like Isaiah Pacheco.
I just don't have any response to what you just said. And then of course Michigan also has Blake Corum, who's entering his second year. Mike Hart, but fast, kind of panned out a little bit last year in the brief flashes where he was actually like on the field and given the ball.
He might be Mike Hart, but fast and a receiver.
Well,
like he ran some good route and he was wide open downfield a couple times when his quarterbacks missed him. And like, you know, you hit on a couple of those and that is kind of what people remember about him.
Yeah. And he took the first snap of the season and got a flare pass and everyone's like, ooh, that went for 20 yards. That's really exciting. Let's see a lot more of that.
And the linebacker read it and he still outran him.
Yeah. I mean, he really has legit top end speed. He's like this little tiny person who's thicker than he is tall these days. And he just has that sort of build where he's 5'8" and has tree trunks sprouting from all over his body. That's just the perfect running back build. And to pair that with the speed that he's got, he's a really exciting prospect. And, you know, honestly, Charbonnet moving out of the way is probably good for this team because I would rather see Blake Corum get more touches. And, like, we've had a rotation at this running back spot for a long time, and there's still going to be a rotation, but, like, there are two guys.
Yeah.
And it's going to be one guy, and then it's going to be other guy, and then you're going to get Donovan Edwards in there for a cameo here and there. And that feels better to me than trying to figure out which of your four dudes you actually want to give the ball to.
Yeah, and they used him so. I mean, everyone pretty much agrees that like the running backs were just misused last year. That like they kind of had one guy in when he was
That's just
it was it, I
you're supposed my, Yeah, let's.
I'm doing a bad job of getting you excited for the
yep,
season.
That's true.
Even in the running backs preview.
Yep.
Well, they also had Chris Evans last year, and he's gone too. So that the combination of those two is going to open up a lot of carries to
he's
go.
He's doing it too.
No, I'm clearing the path for you to get more carries for Blake Corum.
He goes to the Bengals, and the Bengals are like, "Man, this guy can really catch the ball." And I'm like, so I'm just. Like, I did it for, like, six straight season previews. I was like, please throw Chris Evans the ball. And they did it once. And what was it? A touchdown.
Mm-hmm. It was great.
It was great. Anyway, I shouldn't.
So there will
Musa Diabate. Musa Diabate.
There will be more carries to allocate to two guys in particular.
Thank you.
And that's the good news.
And then Edwards is the touted freshman, top 50 national recruit. So he will obviously transfer to Eastern Michigan within 6 months. But if he doesn't, he's also sort of an exciting guy who has the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, modern running back, not just a horse. Haas.
Yeah, I had a very hard time trying to come up with a comp for him and finally just said, fine, Reggie Bush, but human.
That's not good.
That is, all right, so, I mean,
you can't do that. You can't be like Captain America, except he's a real person. That's because that's not a good comparison.
So what's the most Reggie Bush-like guy who's ever played for Michigan?
Fitz Toussaint.
Fitz Toussaint's way smaller.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's pretty big. He was 5'11".
He's not running people over.
Well, yeah, but neither was Reggie Bush.
Reggie Bush could run people over sometimes.
This is a digression. Let's stop it.
Yes. Donovan Edwards, so Bellamy said this directly, that he kind of was saving Edwards for the playoffs a little bit. Like, he used a lot of different guys at running back and kind of wanted Edwards not to take as many hits. And he started falling down the rankings at everywhere but 247. Actually fell down everywhere. Then 247 popped him back up again because they were the only ones who re-ranked after the playoffs. Mm. But, like, when he was in the playoffs, like, he single-handedly beat Belleville. And Belleville had, like, one of the best defenses the state's ever seen. And, I mean, for high school level, he is a high school legend in the state of Michigan on the level of, like, Ty Wheatley.
Okay, but this is still going to be a dip your toe in kind of year, right? Because Michigan has two solid backs in front of him that replicate most of the things he can do. Maybe not in the same person, but
and the word is that it's a 1A, 1B, and then a gap, and then Edwards.
Right.
Yeah.
So year to get used to the offense, see what's going on, that kind of thing.
And that's fine. I think we're going to have a lot of fun every time he's on the field. You can actually have him block. He can block really well, too. So they could have him out there as kind of a quasi-fullback, too. Like that. Every time Edwards sees the field, I think we're going to see something kind of exciting.
And then Dunlap is also on the roster. And, I mean, he's the number four guy and will probably redshirt-ish.
Yeah, and
with the four games thing, probably now.
Yeah, I mean, and they'll get him a couple carries. He is a way better prospect than his rankings. I think one site made him a 4-star, so I couldn't make him the.
You can. He was in a composite. That was my.
Oh, you made the
cutoff.
I said if he was a four star in anybody on anything. We still had. We'll get to Andre Anthony anyway, but he's another guy who's just, like, much better prospect than anyone is really talking about and, like, has way better speed. Than people are like, okay, he's a north-south guy.
All right, but this is going to be a real long podcast, and this guy's going to play this year. So
sure.
Let's,
should we take a break and then come back to the next segment? Because we do that, right?
Do we?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom-printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest from Homeshare Lending. By now, you've probably read about my company on MGO blog, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the most important people in my life, my sons Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
I'm 7.5.
Colby, how old are you?
I'm 5.
Okay, boys, I have three really important questions to ask you. Who's your favorite team?
Michigan.
Who's going to win the big game?
The Wolverines.
And if you could buy or refinance a house with any company, who would you use?
Homeshare Lending.
Good boys. Homeshare Lending. 855-6-BE-SURE. Visit us online if that works better for you. HomeSureLending.com. HOMESURE Lending.com. We've helped Brian, Seth, and a bunch of readers buy or refinance their homes, and we'd love to help you too. All right, only thing left to do. Boys, can I get a go blue?
Go blue.
HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358. Again, give us a call, 855-6-BE-SURE.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security, performance,
conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
So wide receiver we turn to, which is in an interesting spot with one very established returner in Ronnie Bell, who I think we all know what we're going to get from Ronnie Bell.
And part of that is going to be people talking about how he's still underrated, even though everyone pretty much knows who he is at this point.
Right. And then the you have Cornelius Johnson returning from a season in which, well, I mean, it wasn't really a season last year, but people were expecting him to have a bit of a breakout, and he made a few catches, looked fairly decent, was the only person on the roster who wasn't a micromite. And then you have Jackson State transfer Dalen Baldwin, who could be anything at all. And
yeah, so there's really good reasons to be excited about all these guys. Cornelius Johnson did have a pretty decent season, just not a lot of chances.
Mm.
And he's the number one guy they talk about, even over Baldwin, after Bell, obviously. Even the spring takes are like, okay, yeah, Ronnie Bell runs across the middle really fast. Cornelius Johnson, you should see this guy. He's got the speed, he's got the size, and he's the guy projected to be, this is kind of when he was going to break out. I mean, last year was a little bit of a weird season when they couldn't really target him much. If he's ahead of Baldwin at this point, because I think Baldwin's probably going to be a really good player too.
Why do you think that?
Why do I think Baldwin's going to be a good player?
Yeah.
Because Ohio State really wanted him.
How true is that?
I mean, they were... If Ohio State's going after a transfer, given what their wide receiver depth chart looks like...
And were they going after a transfer just because he might otherwise go to Michigan?
No, I think they were on him pretty fast. I think, he was... He had a lot of different... Everyone contacted him at the same time, really. And then he went up to Ohio State, and then he took a look at the depth chart and said, I'm not sure I'm going to, I don't know where I'll end up here. And then Michigan said, well, look at our depth chart. And he ended up here.
Well, the thing the team likes about Johnson and Baldwin is they're bigger guys. And they're bigger targets, which could obviously help a younger quarterback, the larger catch radius, etc. And both of them are measured at 6'2". Ronnie Bell is at 6 foot. Wilson's at 6 foot. So, and they like both guys as deep ball guys too, which they don't have as much of outside of those guys on the depth chart.
No, and it is. I think people do still underrate Ronnie Bell because we had that season 2 years ago where he was the most snake bit kid in college football, right?
Right.
And like I remember putting the season preview together last year and just like trying to show people all of the quote unquote Ronnie Bell drops,
right?
Where he was being missed badly and was able to get like a finger on a pass out in front of him, and then that counted as a drop to people, and then everybody remembers the Penn State legitimate drop.
Yeah.
So then that becomes his reputation, and that simply was not the case. And then you have this abbreviated season with extremely bad quarterback play. And one of the things that does stand out is like what Ronnie Bell, you know, he gets the ball in situations where you think, all right, he's just going to go down. He's mm-hmm. a straight line guy. He's not super shifty. He's not going to turn this into a bunch of yards. He actually does that much better than I have ever expected. And every time he does it, I'm like, oh.
He was literally the best in the country at that in 2019. So the PFF said that he had the highest yards per yards per play after the catch, just because, and you see it every single time. You know, he catches it across the middle. He's like gliding, just getting up space, and you're used to the guy going down at 5 yards at that point. And I think it's just speed. I think he just like he outruns the edge at that point.
Well, and he does have enough juice to like get around guys. There was the long-awaited bubble palooza against Penn State, and he turned right. what should have been a loss into a 30-yard gain in that game. And so that this is like, I think Ronnie Bell is still being slept on by a lot of people, and I think that, you know, if he has a quarterback who can actually get him the ball, then this is going to be his breakout, like national level breakout. Like, is catching a ton of balls.
Yeah, he is. He's certainly the guy that they like to use the most in the offense, and they moved him around between slot and outside last year a lot, and he was even more effective in the slot, I think, because he could run some more of those option routes. And going into the season, you got, you know, a quarterback established in Cade, who's at least going to, you know, the starter, right? So I think that those two guys probably have even a better connection than they would last year when it was like, you know, we didn't even know who the quarterback is. So I agree. In part because a lot of the passing offense, I think, is going to go through getting Ron, you know, create space and then get Ronnie Bell open.
And you can line him up all over the field.
Right.
In the slot, outside, wherever you want him to be.
And so, like, Johnson, Baldwin, Bell are going to get, like, the lion's share of outside snaps. And then you're going to see Bell in the slot frequently.
Yeah. Well, the other two slots, I mean, they're A.J. Henning, who we're excited to see what they do with him anyway, but he's
still sad that Giles Jackson peaced out. But
yes, and we're gonna have to face him.
Yeah, you'll be more sad when he runs one back.
It's gonna be the opening kickoff versus Washington. You know this, right?
I don't want to do that. That would be bad. I mean, like, Alabama raised the white flag against that guy.
Yeah,
and I was like, we can't keep that guy on campus anyway. Let's be happy. So you're saying we're still in Henning.
And Roman Wilson.
Yeah, Roman Wilson is, he was coming on last year too, and he's not just a burner. That guy can jump, and he was a really good fit with Milton because he could just get behind a cornerback really quickly, and like that cover two space between the cornerback and safety level. Every single time he got there so fast, and then the ball got out there so fast that he made it. I think out of the four plays they ran like that, he got a 15-yard gain. And the last one, Milton just missed. I don't know if Cade's going to be able to do that, but, you know, that's...
Here's a projection. No. Right? Like, that was the one thing that Joe Milton had at, like, NFL legend level all time. Nobody has thrown the whole shot against cover two better than Joe Milton.
So, so give it a year, and JJ is going to be rocketing that same throw, and it's going to work. But, I mean, they tried a whole bunch of long balls to him. His route running was not very good last year.
No, well, he came out of Hawaii, and he was a freshman. All freshman wide receivers suck. This is a thing that we all know. Well, you have Sainer still, who's coming into, you know, his third, fourth year on campus?
It's got to be his
third year.
COVID just like completely messes up my sense of time for many reasons.
Saint Riss still was sort of the offensive Donovan Jeter, in that every year we hear the hype. And you remember he comes in 2019, he's like the star of the spring,
right?
And then isn't there in the fall.
Yeah.
Last year, another good spring, had some moments, has had some drop concerns, and then now we're getting the hype again, and is this the time it finally happens?
And last year, he got kicked outside because, you know, Nico left and they didn't have any other outside receivers. So they just like, okay, you out there. So the coaches definitely are serious about trusting him. He did have that fade catch against Rutgers, which was a huge. Didn't he have a great catch against Wisconsin as well?
Yep.
Yeah. And then he had that play against Notre Dame where, like, I think 8 tackles were missed. Which you can put on Notre Dame in the rain and had given up at that moment, but that was another great Saint Riss still play. He's got it in him. I don't know if he can hold off A.J. Henning, who's year two, got 2 highlight reel catches from him already, and he's just, you know, that's the speed and space dude, and that's
Now, let's not put anything on speed and space anymore, right? Because if it was going to happen, it probably already would have happened. Like, they'll dabble with it, and then they're going to throw it away.
Yeah, but they did have a lot of plays for Jackson last year, and that's really going to go to Henning, I think, more than Saint Riss still.
Mm. Then 2 freshmen, Christian Dixon, Andrel Anthony, freshman wide receivers suck.
Yeah.
These guys aren't rated in a spot where they're likely to see much time this year.
Well, ironically, Dixon was a 4-star and Andrel's the 3-star, and I would completely have flipped those two.
Okay.
Yeah, Anthony really impressed me. Even before he started getting a whole bunch of spring hype, I really liked his tape, and he was, you know, he's going to be really good. Don't really need him to be very good this year. And Dixon, I don't know, I kind of saw Greg Matthews in his tape, so, yeah.
All right. But that's the wide receiver core. Tight end is pretty thin right now. You have Eric All and Luke Schoonmaker, who are coming back for third years. All, of course, is the ultimate receiving tight end who couldn't catch anything last year.
But he could block!
And he could block. And then Schoonmaker was a guy who was a converted high school quarterback. Didn't get many snaps last year. Did look very big and fast when he did get snaps.
He did. His blocking was not nearly on the level of All's, and it's very weird that we're saying that.
Yeah,
because
the
that
big guy can't block, and the small guy can't.
But All was getting to guys and getting around them, and if he's got a little bit more strength this year, and he can, you know, fix the drops thing, which, again, practice, but the practice people guys keep on saying that doesn't happen during practice. If it happens again in games, then there's just no defense for it anymore. But, you know, it only happened on a couple, and they did have a lot of targets to him late in the Rutgers game where they were moving the chains with him, and it was, you know, I think it's just we haven't gotten to see him that many times, and he had so like 3 drops really loom really large in his career at this point.
There hasn't been a lot of hype about All in the fall camp, but that's probably injury related. Told it's not a major serious thing, but we just haven't heard a lot about him.
Yeah.
And so if Schoonmaker's not getting talked up though, that doesn't seem good because like
he
this
was
is,
getting talked.
We,
up.
We've heard the occasional Schoonmaker buzz. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they put him in front of the media at one point, so now he's one of the guys, right?
But those two are, I mean, you have Matt Hibner, who's coming off a red shirt.
And we haven't heard anything about him.
Right, and he was a guy who, like, Michigan found at a camp or something, or, like, he worked out for him, and he, like, shot up a million spots on 24/7 and got, like, a tech offer, a Virginia Tech offer.
Right.
And he was, like, just one of those, like, I don't know what it is about tight ends, but tight ends just wander in from the wilderness. They're like goalies in that, like, you can get them from the NAHL and it's whatever.
Because they're like quarterbacks until all of a sudden they get into a camp and someone takes their measurements and they're like, whoa, wait a minute.
You know, we'll feel a lot better about the depth here when Joel Honigford is toasting linebackers down the seam.
He's 50 pounds lighter than he was last year. he is a real tight end now. Like, they just completely gave up on offensive tackle and he's down to, I think, 248 or 258 or something.
Seriously.
And, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're not getting any camp word from him, but he was a good blocker at 300.
Well, they also used him as that, like, bonus tight end guy
a
lot.
Yeah, 6-0-L dude wearing number 95 or whatever it was.
Yeah, and he actually did a good job doing that, so maybe that's not the craziest thing. I mean, they do need, like, if you're putting out a short yardage package right now, I think that he's got to be on it, because, like, do you even have a fullback on this roster anymore?
No. No, they don't. No, I mean, Van Sumeren left, and he was a linebacker when he left, so they don't have a fullback. But like last year, they tried to run fullback stuff with Ben Mason. They didn't know what the heck they were doing. So maybe that, maybe just getting the fullback off the roster.
Well, he was just, he played like as an H-back tight end, and he could have been.
Yeah. But yeah, and then the last
like
guy is
like another guy who goes to the NFL, and everybody's like, hey, what about this guy? And you just like, you just facepalm like Nico Collins and
yep,
pretty much everybody.
Donovan Peoples-Jones right now.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, anyway.
Anyway, Lou Hansen is kind of like a catch-everything dude. Rivals shot him up to like almost a five-star.
True freshman tight end.
Okay. Yeah. True freshman tight end. But still, like, might put him out there and let him catch some things.
Nope. Carter Selzer gets mentioned occasionally.
Carter Selzer?
He may see the field for a player or two per game.
Carter Selzer is like... He was like Sessa shaped last year.
He's very tall.
He's tall.
That's.
I'll tell you what they did with Carter Seltzer last year. They had him in the Wildcat package, and he was the guy that Haskins tried to throw to against Michigan State when they like, hey everybody, guess what play we're gonna run? Hey everybody, we're gonna throw the ball to the tight end. That guy right there, Carter Seltzer. Wait, timeout. Everybody, see? Okay, all right.
That almost worked though. And, you know, in the current regime of Michigan football, we're going to take almost worked. It doesn't actually have to work. It just has to almost work. So tight end's pretty thin. And there's no fullback. This is no longer a Harbaugh roster, guys.
I mean, you get all back. They do not talk about injured guys at all in practice. That's just like one of the hard and fast rules about
sure.
football, right? And all, if he can catch anything like he was supposed to come, like he did coming in.
Sure.
And the blocking improves just even a smidge from last year, like just a little stronger. That's your tight end.
Yep. All right. That's your tight end. We're going to take a break, come back, talk offensive line.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love M. Goblaw. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games.
Well,
and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGO blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter. Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
Taking a break, we have returned. We are now talking offensive line. I gotta admit, I have no idea what's going on here.
So right now, Ryan Hayes is gonna be the left tackle.
All right, I knew that one.
That's been sharpied in.
I knew that one.
Wire to wire.
Got yep. that one.
It sounds like Trevor Keegan is gonna be left guard.
Okay.
He seems to have pulled away from Filianga. Vistardis looks like he's gonna be the center.
All right.
Zinter then will be right guard.
Okay.
And then Andrew Stuber out at right tackle. That looks like your line. It might not be that way in week one due to some people being banged up, but that's the ones.
Well, how do we feel about that?
So all offseason, the one thing I wanted, and Sam was banging the table for this too, is Zinter at center. And they were talking about it in spring, which tells you a lot of things about what they think about Vastardis, tells you who they think their best linemen are, and that it didn't happen kind of tells you that it's not going to happen, at least not this year. Which, okay, Zinner's not going to be the center. He is the guy that they absolutely adore.
Mm.
So, and he was a true freshman on the line last year. So throughout everything except the fact that he was playing as a true freshman, and that kind of tells you that they probably got something there.
And they think he's going to be their best lineman this year.
I didn't mean that to sound the way it did. But
I did not mean that to sound like I just made an MRP sound at a true sophomore being the best lineman next this year. But yes, I mean, Stuber's good. Stuber would
Stuber
be
can play.
Stuber would not be lost in any Wisconsin offensive line.
Sure, it's a little concerning that he's at tackle because he's had some issues with speed rushers, and I know it's a right tackle, so it's not left tackle, but you know. They still put those guys out there. Just the quarterback can see him a little bit better.
They do, but I mean, he's had fewer issues than even got. Like, he's better than Runyon, at least in that regard.
Well, that's not. That's a really hard thing to say because it's like Runyon.
got run
before
by.
Before yeah. or Runyon after?
Now, even Runyon after could not handle, like, the elites.
No.
And. You know, they put in Stuber as a redshirt freshman against Ohio State and then Florida, who had almost as good of...
Right.
And he
got trashed.
He survived.
He got trashed.
I UFR'd this one, not you.
No,
he survived.
He got trashed.
Well, that was a long time ago.
But even so, he got put in against Michigan State, and he was good on the ground, and then he had some major issues against people he was going to always have major issues against. I think overall spoke well to his potential, and then last year, don't really have a year. And
yeah, I mean, we can use the Zinter talk against him a little bit, too, because Zinter at center would have moved him into guard, and then that would have given them an opportunity to play either Carson Barnhart or Trente Jones, who they like a lot, at tackle.
Right, and so we're talking about this line, and there are two names that stand out as, like, not present, and that's Barnhart, and it's Nolan Rumler. And Rumler was supposed to be center material, right?
I don't know if he was center material. He's guard material. He was a smaller on Wainu. Like, he just, you know, that guy touches you and you go down. There's just some
apparently
some mass
not, because then he'd
on.
Be playing.
Well, it's possible he's not a great pass protector. I don't know. I mean, it's not like we got a spring game to watch these guys or anything this year. So
when was the last spring game we actually got?
17.
That's insane. We used to have content. Remember that? It was nice. The spring game would happen and we'd talk about it for like a couple of weeks.
Sure. I mean, we at least, and we used to get more spring game than we got this year, which was literally less than a minute.
Yeah.
So
anyway.
So yeah, it's hard for us to, I don't know where Rumler is, but like they really like Barnhart. That was not surprising. Barnhart was a really good recruit. Trente Jones, the same kind of recruit. And the fact that they want to be able to play those guys is not surprising, and I think that's good for their depth. The fact that they are not playing those guys, I think, tells you that Zinter at center wasn't going to work. The fact that they wanted to move Zinter in there means that they'd rather play Trente Jones and Barnhart than Vastardis. And Vastardis got passed last year by Zach Carpenter, who's now Indiana's starting center. So I don't have a lot of confidence in this.
So one question about Vastardis is, was he hurt last year? That's something that has been rumored, that he had a nagging issue that may have hamstrung his play in some regard.
I mean, there were...
Was that intentional?
No.
Okay.
That was just word choice.
They say that sometimes in this program when somebody doesn't perform well and then they're stuck with
them. I mean, all programs do that.
Sure.
And then there's the kind of elephant in the room where out went Ed Warner.
Uh-huh.
And in came Sherrone Moore.
And the players seem very happy about this.
But
very, very happy
when Ed Warner
about this.
Came in, Michigan's blitz pickup went from the worst in the country to very, very good. And so he has this long career as an offensive line coach. He has improvements at every stop of the way. And he raised the dead upon arrival. I am an Ed Warner believer. And Sherrone Moore was an offensive lineman.
Yes.
But has never coached offensive line. And that just seems like an insane decision to make.
I've heard that Warner was not doing the level of coaching that we think that he was. And I am also told that the tight ends blocking last year, that did improve incredibly. Especially, like, they turned Eric All into a blocker.
No, so Eric All showed up as a blocker.
No, he was not a good blocker in high school.
That's because he was a stick, and in high school, no, we're not going to agree on this.
Okay. Either way, the players like Sherrone Moore way better than
I don't care about that. Why would I care about that?
I'm only giving you the information.
Do you know,
that we
everybody
have.
Loves Brady Hoke. They're like, this guy's awesome. He's like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. He drank all the beer in Muncie, Indiana. This guy's rad. And then what happened? I don't care.
Yeah. Well,
they like it better. Okay.
I'm willing to give Moore the opportunity to, you know, to coach. I'm willing to see what it looks like.
Well, you don't have a choice.
I'm saying I'm not
like
be
if
like...
Seth rolls up and he's like, hey guys,
yep,
ixnay on the orme. They're gonna like make a change.
In my head, I'm given a chance. I
is that better?
I'm not.
I'm sorry.
Hey, I'm a big fan of waiting for evidence before making conclusions.
Yes, which would have been nice if there was any evidence about Sherrone Moore as an offensive line coach before they made the conclusion he should be the offensive line coach.
You know, Les Miles was not an offensive line. He was not an offensive line coach before he became the offensive line coach. So he turned out okay as an offensive line coach.
And that was a different program, though.
Sure.
If you tell me that Wisconsin has hired some random person who's been with their program for 70 billion years to be their offensive line coach, I'm like, okay, whatever.
Sure.
It's the same thing.
Sure.
This is not that situation.
But Moore's been here for a long time, and he was coaching under Warner for a long time. And I don't think the tight ends and tackles never met, right? Like, they were coaching together most of this anyway. So, I mean, I can't imagine that the kind of coaching Warner was doing is going to be dramatically different under Moore, who was coaching right next to him.
Sure. I'll be interested to see how it works out. And that's not me being defeatist. It could actually go well. So you have... You're starting five. You have some problems where this is not the optimal configuration, perhaps. But then you have Barnhart, and you have Jones, and you have guys who I think that have... I mean, Barnhart played a bit and was fine.
Yeah.
Like, they have some depth here. They can take a couple of hits, and it'll be fine. They have a couple of guys who have big upside. Like, I'm relatively sanguine about the situation here, except for the seemingly strange departure of Warner. I'm going to say it'll be okay.
I'm honestly more concerned that Carpenter left than Warner left.
Well, I mean, that's just the thing about the program, right? People like to leave it. Even when it's like, hey, would you like to be Michigan's starting center for 4 years? And the guy's like,
I
what about Tom Allen? He seems like a cool guy.
He does seem like a cool guy all of a sudden.
Well,
everyone, I mean, he picked up some pretty good transfers this year, but I don't want it. That could have been a I want to move closer to home thing. And
yeah, people did say it was maybe not entirely football related.
Yeah. But. And COVID was a weird situation anyway. So
sure.
I just don't believe the injury thing with Astartes. I think that there were protection problems last year, and I don't know if that's going to improve that much this year.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to see what it seems like, how it feels on the other side.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go. HomeSure Lending. Both fair and honest, HomeSure Lending is local, efficient, and small enough so you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hey, this is Matt Demarest. I'm the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a small, local, family-owned business, and so I'm here with a couple of members of my family, Cooper and Colby, my boys. Cooper, how old are you, buddy?
9!
Colby, what about you?
7!
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
We're a family business here in Ann Arbor. I'd love to serve you and your family with any of your mortgage needs.
Located at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HomeSureLending. You can reach Matt at 734-531-9950. HomeSure Lending, NMLS 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage it with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
That ain't no ghost, it's a reflection of you. Why do you turn away, keep it out of sight? Oh, don't live up to your given role. There's more inside you that you won't show. But you keep it hidden just like everyone. Scared to show and make you vulnerable. So you wear that ghost around you for disguise. But there's no need, just cause it's all we've known. There's more inside you that you haven't shown. So you keep on moving, moving, moving your feet.
Keep on shuffling to this ghost dance beat. Just keep on walking down the ending streets.
Seth! Alex! I need your rawest takes! Takes so raw, they could be Michigan's backup quarterback situation! Ah!
Oh my god, I haven't done that in too long.
No, and I just remembered I need to turn down your volume before you do that, at least in our headphones. I forgot. I used to do that every time, just kind of like just turn the dial down really quick while you do that, so I get the whole recording.
Well, looks like we're all...
We don't get the whole recording.
Looks like we're all Michigan's backup quarterback situation. Seth, give me your raw take!
Ed Warner was not a big loss!
Oh! That's what they would say. That's what they would say.
That's what they would say, isn't it? Isn't it? But you know what? First of all, he went to FIU. It's not like someone like, you know, swooped in like, oh my god, you got Ed Warner available. And every other place he's been, they kind of were ready to get rid of him by the end. So,
well, it sounds like Jim Harbaugh.
Was that your raw take, or do you have
one? No, okay. That was just something that popped into my head completely innocently. All right, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. You put your reputation on the line for Sharon Moore.
I'm willing
Such
to do that.
As it is. It's not a lot to put on the line.
I got my Sharon shirt on today.
All right. Alex, I need your raw take.
I don't really have a voice down for this, but
you
this will be my
try. You have to do the voice. You want it on this podcast. You have to do the voice.
Trevor Keegan will be Michigan's best offensive lineman.
Okay, you gotta try that again. I need it roar.
No.
No!
That was my best shot.
That was your best shot?
Yeah, I don't...
You're 22. You sound like you're a 14-year-old in high school.
Okay.
Come on, step it up.
Trevor Keegan will be Michigan's best offensive lineman.
There we go.
There it is.
There we go.
Basically, just he won a position battle. He was a pretty good recruit, and coaches seem to like him. There's a lot of uncertainty on this line, and roll the dice.
All right.
The thing is, they like four guys better than him at least. So.
Well, and the coaches have always been right about the offensive line.
All right, here's my hot take. J.J. McCarthy starts by week four.
Whoa. That's Rutgers? That's Rutgers.
Rutgers, yeah.
Well, we do have a tradition of, like, you know, bringing out our new quarterback for Rutgers.
Well,
the Brandon Peters era.
I'm basing this on several things. One, of course, is J.J. McCarthy will get better faster because he's younger. Also, there is a not insignificant chance that Cade McNamara will be broken in half 2 games into the season.
By NIU, though?
Well, by Washington,
Washington
maybe.
Could do it, yeah.
Like, so there's a lot of ways that things can go pear-shaped at quarterback, including McNamara not performing or getting hurt. And as Alex mentioned, the first time McNamara has a pass that hits the ground, everybody's like, get this bum out of here! And then, it is sort of a raw take. It is. You know, these aren't supposed to be totally realistic.
But it is. It is our raw power segment, and if you would like us to continue making Alex work on his raw power voice, then you should try the Raw Power app for iOS, and that will make your photos look very, very pretty.
All right, so this is year 3 for Josh Gattis. He's got no fullbacks. He's got, like, a tight end. He's got a returning quarterback, sort of. There is talent at the skill positions. There is a reasonable shot at a good offensive line. Why does this feel so much worse than all of that?
Well, first of all, you started a sentence with Josh Gattis doesn't have a fullback, which is like, that is not at all what Josh Gattis was brought in here to be.
Exactly. So Josh Gattis was brought in here to be something. And have we really, we've been saying speed and space for 3 years now. And like, there's like drips and drabs. And then it's just like, all right, that went away.
I think that he was a first-time coordinator and that he's been more conservative than he should be. I think that he has not called his offense when he's supposed to. And I think that I don't agree that Harbaugh is running the show. I think that's a when you look at, like, even I did some statistical analyses of like where they throw the ball and like how they call plays and stuff like that. And it kept on coming back so glaringly different since Gattis got here, that at least Gattis has had some, you know, a major effect on how they design the offense and call the plays. I don't know if he's got like the shackles off, or I don't know if it maybe he's this is how he is, right? He's the first time coordinator for us.
You're not looking at a quarterback situation that's like, all right, this is time for Rex Grossman.
Uh-huh.
Let's just hurl the ball everywhere, right?
Uh-huh. So, but it was, that's not what he was. He was like, let's create space for our guys and let them make plays. And he's done that. That's why we see Ronnie Bell, you know, lead the nation in 2019 in yards after catch average. That's a very Josh Gattis offense thing. I think we were just looking at the wrong things. We were like, okay, he's going to be Rich Rod. He's not Rich Rod. He's Josh Gattis.
Well, I think he's been hamstrung by the quarterback, too, because...
Well, yeah.
Like, he called some plays,
mm-hmm.
and then Shea Patterson was like, I decline to run this correctly. Like, they ran the same, like, arc twice in a row against Illinois,
because yeah.
it was there, and he... handed it off, and then they ran it again, and they're like, if you keep the ball, I am going to cut your dick off. And so he kept the ball, but it just felt like the decision-making about all of the read stuff that is the heart of Josh Gattis' offense just wasn't there with Shea Patterson. And then, you know, with Milton, it was actually strange because they didn't even try.
Right.
Like, one of the big things that was a question mark after a couple of games with Joe Milton is like, after that Michigan State game, it's like, you have this like gazelle of a man who's 6'5" and you didn't put him on the ground at all. You didn't, I mean,
yeah, I don't have a good explanation. My best guess is that they realized that they were going to need to be slinging the ball around a lot more. And because of that, you only have so much practice time. Joe Milton,
I mean,
is only like,
I don't know if I can agree with that. Cause the whole idea about like this system is supposed to be like, all right, we're going to run a bunch of mesh points. Some of those mesh points are going to be RPO. Some of those are going to be zone reads. The most important thing for the quarterback to be able to do is just make the right decision at the mesh point. And maybe Joe Milton wasn't ready to do that. And that's like kind of the hope that you have for this offense, is that somehow Cade McNamara is. Like,
yeah.
Like, he's just the savant of the mesh point.
or just gets like 90% of them right.
We're gonna go with the hoity sounding title.
Well, you know what we've been hearing about this offense? They want to establish the run.
Okay,
so
I'm not like opposed to that, as long as we're actually evening up the numbers by running a real zone read.
Yeah, well, so I think they believe that their running backs are the strength of the offense, and that's how they're gonna take the load off Cade.
I mean, that doesn't sound crazy.
Like, no.
If you look at the running backs and you look at a second-year quarterback who doesn't scream immediate all-Big Ten quarterback, like, that makes sense. The problem has always been is that, like, they've like, you remember the Army game?
No.
See? So they had this...
Now you're doing it!
So they had this run game under Harbaugh that was consistently inventive and really... Like, every week it was a pleasure to break it down because mm-hmm. it was like, ooh, that's cool. I haven't seen that before. I haven't seen that in a while. And, like, people didn't really know what hit them. Like, they'd come out in the T formation.
Yeah.
And it kind of felt like, you know, Gattis has a lot of focus on these reads. And then the kind of part of the offense that used to be, I mean, everything's been done in football. So innovative, maybe not. The right way,
right? But like, we can reach deeper into the bag and pull out something that people
haven't seen. Fullback traps and all that stuff, and you know, the ability for Michigan to run the ball with a creative and consistently effective ground game. I had more faith in that under Harbaugh than Gattis. It doesn't really feel like his wheelhouse.
Yeah, I mean, that is absolutely fair. I think that Gattis' wheelhouse is supposed to be RPOs.
RPOs and mesh stuff and just keeping people out of the box so that your run game gets evened up and you don't have to be that creative.
But he hasn't run that many screens. I mean, Michigan has been one of the most screen-averse teams in the country under him.
Yep.
And you talk about, like, how you want to get people away, you know, away from your running game and away from your quarterback. Guess what? Screen plays. And you want to get the ball in your running back hands.
Right. And you have Ronnie Bell, you have Corum who can flip out to the slot. You have a couple of slots who would be really threatening in that situation. And it has consistently been maddening, inexplicable, that hasn't really been tried. And they try it, and it's like, oh, that was Remember that Penn State game?
Yeah.
They threw like 8 bubble screens and they went for like 10 yards each.
Yep.
And the Corum throw at the beginning of the Minnesota game. And if you do that super consistently, there people are going to come up. You're not going to get the easy yards all the time. But then you're going to be opening other things up and you're going to be making it easier for your smash routes and you're going to be making it easier over the middle and it's going to be making it easier for you to like fake a screen and run into a 5-guy box or a 6-guy box. 5 is definitely unrealistic for this offense.
One of the things that hurt them last year, I think, and that we might be underrating is that the offensive line injuries completely every week starting a different offensive line.
Yeah.
And so if you're out there trying to like decide what are we going to practice, what are we going to install, you're not going to be installing new traps, especially with like, you know.
No, I don't think those are ever coming back.
Yeah.
Like that's not what Michigan's ground game is going to be, but how do you make that ground game effective when it's not going to be the Harbaugh thing where it's like, here we're doing bash.
But even if you want to do a tunnel screen, that takes a lot of practice from your offensive lineman learning how to get out and get to
sure.
the right. So,
but you're probably teaching the backups how to do it at the same time, right? Like it's not like I don't think a tunnel screen is too complicated to know how to run. And I honestly don't like tunnel screens that much. but I feel like just the sum of the parts of this offense has been kind of not what it should have been the past couple of years. And I don't really, the optimistic take on that is that it was a quarterback issue and that Shea Patterson didn't make the right decisions. I can vouch for that.
Yeah.
and that Joe Milton was not in a place where he was going to be particularly good in the read game. And I can see that being the case.
Yeah.
And so if it's a quarterback issue and Cade McNamara is the spawn of the mesh point, it could feel much better. If it's a Josh Gattis issue, I think Matt Campbell will still be available at the end of the year. I think if this offense continues to struggle and it continues to struggle in ways where it looks systematically bankrupt, this defense isn't going to pick you up and carry you to the Outback Bowl.
And that is one of the points I want to make about last year's offense and about establishing the run. Last year, almost 50%, I think it was just a couple plays under, 50% of their plays were not standard downs. So they were in passing downs or in comeback mode or in garbage time for at least half of the season last year. So half the time when they lined up, a 6-yard run was not going to get you anything.
Mm.
So how do you run your offense if half the time you actually have to throw downfield? If you're in a situation, if you're playing situational ball, you can't really run an offense.
And your offensive line is in shambles and both your quarterbacks are injured. And
yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how fair it is to count, their play calling last year when you look at the fact that their play calling was, they had to go and throw the ball downfield half the time.
That's true, but also so, the swing pass to Corum.
I think the one thing I just want to see, and this was an old theme that had been talked about over the years, but just a coherent plan from the beginning of the season that doesn't get thrown out mid-year. Right, like
we'll do the defense next podcast.
Maybe that would happen. That would be nice.
Just a general sense of how they're going to do things, and not again week 6 be scrambling and trying this new thing. And
yeah, like they decided they were a zone team, or a gap block team. I think each of the last 3 years, and then halfway through the season was like, this was a huge mistake. I would like that to stop.
I mean, last year they ran the same offense from start to finish.
Well, I mean,
you played 6 games.
Yeah. But I mean, it's obvious what they are. They're a smash mouth. If you have Andrew Stuber on that line, you're a smash mouth football team.
Sure.
You know, if you have Zach Zinner as your favorite lineman, there's a reason. You know, he's a big, big dude.
But so, I mean, I like both running backs. I like Ronnie Bell a lot, and I think that you're going to be able to find a number 2 in there. And the offensive line feels like it could be fairly solid, and then the main thing that makes me a little bit hesitant about projecting anything nice, it's twofold. It's the fact that McNamara is a quarterback.
Right.
And we are in a situation where the 2 guys who were supposed to be competing for the job both exited without looking very good.
Yep.
So how this sort of default Harbaugh quarterback is going to be good is out the window. And then I don't know how much I trust Josh Gattis as an offensive coordinator.
I think that's totally fair. I mean, I wouldn't count last season against him, and I would just go back to 2019.
I brought up the Army game.
but he was also a first-time coordinator, so he might have a little bit more
runway. So, but I just feel like by the end of the season, we're going to be like, this was still kind of less than the sum of his parts. That's what's gonna, how it's going to feel.
The optimistic take is that there's a lot of talent here. And you look at the offensive line room, for example, a lot of those guys we all liked as recruits, and we like a lot of the players on this team. And it's just up to the coaching staff to play up to the talent.
Yeah, and if like you said, with the Warner problem, like there should be a Wile E. Coyote year where, you know, these guys have already been coached.
Sure.
So the biggest thing I can think of is 2019 against Alabama. That offense worked, was smart, made sense. It was cohesive. It was the right offense for the players they had. They called plays at the right time, and the only reason it didn't work was Shea Patterson missed wide open guys downfield.
Oh, God.
And our optimistic take is McNamara is as good as Shea Patterson.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for this podcast. Tune in next dog time for the defense, which will be even better at making you feel happy.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm Seth Fisher along with Brian Cook and Alex Train. Tune in next time for part B where we talk about all the fun things.
Just go, just do that. There you go.
Okay.
There we
okay.
go.
This is so brutal.